It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
For the right advice at the right time, you can call on Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are both in the studio today. Good morning, gentlemen.
It's a miracle. We're both here.
It's good to have you both back.
Yeah. Busy guys.
Yeah,
that's
right.
A good thing, right?
Right.
Listen, Ben, how are you doing?
We're doing well.
Good.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, we want to talk about, and we probably will talk about this week, and again into next week, and I'd like to lay the foundation, which is, you know, what is it called when more than one person inherits property or owns property?
Trouble, that's what it is.
It can be trouble. And, of course, the North Carolina statutes, as one would expect, address this very specifically, called basically a partitioning action, P-A-R-T-I. Partition.
You're there.
P-A-R-T-I-T-I-O-N. But the bottom line is the interesting thing, the reason I stopped was the first part of the word, P-A-R-T. Yes, it is a part. A part of the property. Now, you know, Ben, let's just be honest here. A lot of property is owned in parts.
Yes.
That's more right. Property from, you know, Cape Hatteras to Asheville is owned in parts than owned by the whole.
Okay.
We own the whole usually with our land, our home. But all of our agricultural properties, our farms, our timberlands, most all of these properties are owned in parts by members of the family or a couple of guys who back in, you know, the turn of the century, 1900, decided they would lay claim to that 5,000 acres, you know, and the two of them own it, and then respective members of their family now own it.
Right, right.
So a lot of land is owned by the part. Also, Ben, you know, Wes and I deal routinely with estate work. And when parents, grandparents leave their property to their children, it is left to them by the part. Okay? A third, and a third, a half and a half, 25% if they're four children. So we are dealing with the part in our office a whole lot more often than we're dealing with the whole. Okay?
That makes sense.
And so I know our listeners are beginning to tune in and say, gosh, boy, yeah, I got my property with my sister, and wow.
Yeah,
or I own my
right.
sister, my property with my niece or nephew, you know, and wow, you know, because issues arise. Now, with all that background, let's begin to say that the next thing to lay on the table is that North Carolina and most states have procedures for these resolution of conflict with regard to these part owners. And why is that? And expedited, I might add, expedited procedures, as Wes is going to help, is going to demystify here in a few minutes, because we want land to be at its highest and best use, see. Land is, you know, there are two things in the law that as a lawyer now of some 30 years, I would say are at the top of the list in terms of public policy. That is marriage. We see that over and over and over again, don't we?
Sure.
In our estate work and in real property, in every area of the law, the rights of the marriage. And the second one is the interest in the public policy toward the value of land. Land needs to be at its highest and best use.
It's really the foundation of American, the great American experiment.
It absolutely
is. Ownership
of land. Yes. So the courts are just not going to lay idle to the fact that a brother and a sister can't get along about this property, or whatever the case might be, whoever the part owners might be. And so we have a special proceeding in our statutes that begin to outline the way in which a part owner petitions the court to bring these, to bring this issue to a head, if you will, so that it can be resolved.
Yeah, it's really, it's quite interesting facet of the law because of that idea of highest and best use of the land. Even a 1/8 owner can prevent that land from being stymied.
Correct. Right. Correct.
Yeah.
And I think that our listeners need to hear this because we get phone calls all the time where, or consults in the office where folks feel trapped by their part ownership and they don't really know of a way out and they don't really realize that there is a defined and precise procedure under North Carolina law to escape the fact that you do not have, you know, complete and total control of the property. One more thing, Ben, and then I'll hand it over to Wes. One more thing is the part is very interesting because, as we've also mentioned in the on the program, it's also in the law, it's called an undivided interest. But when you have an undivided interest, you have a right to the whole.
Right.
That's what's amazingly interesting about this and a little complex. But a part owner, in fact, has the right to the whole. Someone might say, well, you know, I own 85% of the property. You only own 15% of the property. That's the way mom and dad left it or granddad or whatever. You have a very small interest in this property. You may even have a 1% interest in the property. Okay.
Right.
But as a 1% owner or a 15% owner, even though you are a minority in interest in terms of the whole, you have the right to occupy all of the land. And so this really creates an issue, as one can imagine.
Yeah. All right. Again, you're getting into this particular area of law, so we call on the litigator here. So,
yeah, this does become somewhat contentious sometimes. You know, this quasi-litigation type situation is set forth in our statutes, petition to partition statutes. And, you know, it, probably it just knee-jerk reaction to it. You think, okay, I own 60% of the property. My brother owns 40%. Whatever I say goes.
Right.
Is my vote that carries the day. I mean, that's what you kind of think would be the play, the way it would work. But that's not the way it works, especially as it relates to possession. Like Cecil just mentioned, you know, even that, or you mentioned a moment ago, even that 1/8 owner, that 1/10 owner or whatever, they have a right to possess the whole. I mean, let's say that it's a, let's say it's a beach condo or a house on the beach or something like that. Well, that, that 10% owner could move in and has every right to be there and to stay there to the exclusion of everybody else. You can't kick him out. He's not trespassing.
That's right.
He has a 10% interest. He has a right to be there. So the only way to really break up that type situation and many of these situations so that we can get the highest and best use of the property is to proceed with that, that petition to partition. Now, when we file this action, this is one of these many actions that we talk about here on the program where the clerk of court, has jurisdiction over it, original jurisdiction. Here we are in a clerk of court race coming up. Don't want to get into politics, but that I was having a conversation with someone last week or this past weekend about, you know, what in the world does the clerk of court do? Do they, well, they keep the courthouse organized.
That's right.
You know, what do they do?
They're
a clerk. Well, my response to that person was that, believe me, they have some very important responsibilities. And one of those responsibilities is to serve as the judge over partition proceedings. So, you know, once you file the action for partition of property, say under this situation where we have the one owner who's moved in and won't move out, or the one owner who won't contribute to the taxes or the insurance or the maintenance or whatever, or the one owner who won't go along with the use, the vacation use plan of the beach house over the summer or whatever it may be, then you file that, and then the court, you know, has the right to do several things at that point in time.
Yeah. Now, when you say this, you talk about that. This is often a case, as you mentioned, Cecil, too. This is an estate where somebody has left property, and they left it simply in that kind of ownership.
That's correct. Right. And sometimes we deal with the petition to partition while the estate's still open.
Oh, really?
Sometimes it's after the estate's closed. Really, it doesn't have much to do with the estate being open because real property passes immediately upon death.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, you, just because an estate is open and we don't have the issue with regard to the use of the property worked out, but the, let's say the will left the property 50-50 to the two people who don't get along, you could still proceed with that partition
action. All right, that makes
sense. There's no standing issue right there, or yeah. ripeness issue.
Mm-hmm.
So be that as it may, you know, you file that before the clerk of court. The clerk has jurisdiction to hear this. And initially what happens is we make a determination at the initial hearing as to whether the property can be divided itself. Let's say if it's a large tract of farmland, then we're probably in the division mode. We're not in the sale mode. So,
in fact, that's the first order.
That's
right.
Right.
To see if it can actually be physically divided.
That's right. That's what the court has to do if it can be physically divided without damage to the value of the whole. But if it can't be divided, without damage to the value of the whole, then you have to go into a sale posture. Now, if we're talking about a division of the property, the way the statute reads on that is that the clerk has to appoint three commissioners in order to make a determination as to how the property would be divided. And we're normally talking about maybe a real property appraiser, maybe a surveyor, maybe an attorney, something like that. So we get some different expertise and disciplines involved in that so that they can take all the relevant information into consideration and actually divide the property so that it's equal. Or if it's eight owners, then, you know, 1/8 each, or if it's 50%, then 25-25, then 50-25-25. And sometimes if you're dealing with a situation where you have so many owners, you can't divide it out equally because you have so many owners, even if it is a large tract of property. It just depends on the circumstances.
Can the commissioners suggest, for example, maybe a property has a natural division, you know, the way it's the land is laid out. There's a natural division of in half that would be would appear to be of equal value. Can you group, if you had multiple owners, could they be grouped together to own that property that way?
No, you can't force someone to end up being another tenants and common owner.
Okay.
The goal of this is to sever the tenants and common ownership.
Okay, gotcha.
And there is some creativity that the commissioners can use in order to find the resolution, but it's a lot. It's largely limited. They really are supposed to. You know, for example, there's a case in North Carolina that says that they can't impose an easement on someone.
Right.
They can't.
Right. Gotcha.
They don't have that authority to say you're going to have an easement on your property. They have to divide it out equally. And if
because
it's
property
just,
has to allow for access.
If it can't be divided out equally and that's determined, then you end up in the sale either by public sale or private sale. So that's the process, you know, with regard to the division of the property. And then when we get to the issue of in the event that it can't be divided, then we talk about the sale of the property, then there's a whole lot of other options that we can talk about at that point in time. Like I just mentioned, you know, a public sale, which is kind of like a foreclosure sale. Some of the courthouse steps, you have a 10-day upset bid period. You have to upset it by, I think it's $750 or 5%. You have to continue to increase it at least that much, so you can't upset it by a penny.
Yeah, but you can also then choose a private sale.
You can do a private sale.
Right.
Yep. And I think we're going to go to
commercial.
We'll talk about that when we get back.
We'll come back more. And if you have questions, 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. Hey, welcome back to the program here as we are talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins about the petition to partition from their expertise at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law online at harvellandcollins.com. And Wes, you were talking about the sale of a property that it may turn to. There's a couple of different ways that can be done.
Right. You know, and at the outset, you know, when you talk with clients about the sale of the property and you talk about the possibility of a public sale in the courthouse steps, or you talk about the possibility of a private sale. And normally when you have a private sale, all you're really doing is forcing the sale of the property by listing the property, let's say, with a realtor.
Right.
I mean, we're really trying to get the most we can for the property. And if for some reason we couldn't get the owners to agree to sell the property, then we can go through that process with the realtor. Interestingly, you know, when you talk about a forced sale, a partition sale, people think, well, that's, I don't want to do that because that's just going to be a fire sale. We're not going to get much.
Yeah.
We're not going to get much. It's going to be a fire sale. The public's going to know that this is a forced sale.
Mm-hmm.
Not if it's a private sale. If it's a private sale, it's just a standard situation where the realtor lists the property. It's in the MLS. It's available. It gets shown.
Anybody can buy it.
It's the same type situation as if, you know, the parties came together and agreed mm-hmm. to sell the property. So, you know, that's the way that works. Now, also from a public sale, you know, perspective, this is the interesting dynamic with regard to the fact that owners can actually bid in on that. And
sure.
they could bid in on the private sale if they want to, but it wouldn't make that much sense for them to go, for us to involve a realtor and then them, you know,
buy it back.
You're just paying that commission for no reason. But on a pub, in a public sale context, I mean, let's say that we have someone who owns 90% of the property,
mm-hmm.
and then the other person owns 10% of the property. And this person who has the 10% of the property has been a real pain mm-hmm. in our side with regard to this. Maybe they're not contributing to anything. Maybe they're possessing the property, using it to the exclusion of the 90% owner.
Right, not paying the taxes.
Right. Maybe they're misusing the property to the mm-hmm. point where it's getting run down, you know, whatever it may be. Well, upon a petition to partition with regard to that, in the event that the court, you know, grants that public sale,
mm-hmm.
then the parties, the 10% owner, the 90% owner, they can both bid in on the property. So the 90% owner been in that type situation, let's say the high bid was $100,000 on the property. Well, the 90% owner is only going to have to come up with $10,000
right.
to buy out the other,
right.
the 10% owner,
because
he already owns, you know, 90%, mm-hmm. $90,000 worth of the property. So that dynamic of being able to bid in is oftentimes very useful in allowing us to get to a point where, you know, we go to the courthouse steps for a sale, but we actually bid in ourselves for purposes of just, you know, trying to buy out that other tenancy
common owner.
And usually when you get to that point, you've already tested the waters on that pretty significantly.
Mm-hmm.
You've already talked with that 10% owner.
You've already maybe even made an effort to try
and buy it. How much money do you want for it? What do we think the reasonable value is? You know, maybe the 10% owner wants $50,000 for mm-hmm. his $10,000 worth of property, and we just couldn't get there. Well, the 10% owner doesn't have the ability to kind of hold you up there as
right.
far as the value, because mm-hmm. the partition is going to allow us to get to the true value with regard to the property. So again, that issue with regard to the tenants and common owners having the right to bid in,
mm-hmm.
you know, is very important, because that stops the deadlock,
mm-hmm.
and it does it in a way where, you know, the person who is the holdout or the person whose interest is being purchased, at least in theory under the statute, is going to get paid fair market value or close to fair market value in most situations. So it's really fair to both parties, but it doesn't allow that minority owner, the minority interest owner,
mm-hmm.
to then kind of control the situation based on their very small interest.
Mm-hmm.
So
now,
Cecil, I know you see that in the estate context all the time.
We do, and I think what is critically important for the listeners to understand is that, you know, a public sale, as Wes is explaining, does not mean that you're going to necessarily lose your property.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an interest in the property, then whatever the price is going to be reduced by your interest, your 50% interest, your third interest, whatever the case might be.
Mm-hmm.
You have every right to obtain the title to the property, but of course now you will have, you know, no longer a part, you'll have the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we do see this a lot in the estate arena. Because again, a very small minority interest.
Right.
It's just in the state of North Carolina
it's powerful.
Is very, very powerful when mm-hmm. it comes to land ownership.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more here as we're talking about the petition to partition, how you settle those matters. Sometimes it can be contentious about who owns what and who gets to own it later. We'll have more coming up in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. They're online at harvellandcollins.com. You can also reach them at 726-9050. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins. And we're talking about the petition to partition. So where does that leave us now?
Well, we've walked through the process, Ben, of potentially a division of the property. And we've walked through the process briefly of the sale of the property. Back to the division of the property briefly. Now, obviously, the clerk of court acts as the judge here, but we have an appeal right with regard to that, and that's vitally important. One thing I would say to those listening is that if you feel as though you need to proceed with one of these situations in a partition of the property, whether it be by division of the property or whether it be by sale of the property, just to address these issues that we've dealt with here today, I would highly recommend that you do seek an attorney for that. There are a lot of pitfalls and landmines in these type situations. And then there's that appeal right. But I can tell you the appeal of the decision with regard to the division of the property is not very favorable, you know, to the appellant.
Yeah.
Because really what happens is that you're in a situation where the co-commissioners are going to submit their report to the clerk of court after they've done their due diligence. The clerk is then going to take that into consideration. Anyone opposing that within 10 days has a right to make exception to that. And then the clerk really can just do, the clerk at that point in time can't really overturn it under this exception or make a different decision. The clerk can then do several things. Fire the commissioners because they just did a terrible job, which hardly ever happens. Because, by the way, the clerk appointed these people. The clerk can basically redirect that back to them with maybe an additional question that needs to be answered. Those are the things that you normally see.
So the initial appeal remains in with the clerk's office.
Well, it's a couple of things. It's first of all, it is an exception. You take an exception first. That goes to the clerk, and the clerk can address that. And in most cases, you're going to maybe send this question back to the commissioner. They're going to answer it, and then it goes back to the clerk for a final determination. Now, once that final determination is made, then you have the right to appeal to Superior Court. But at that point in time, the die is pretty much cast. You have to – the burden – in order to have that clerk's decision changed by a Superior Court judge, it's pretty high. So I've had, you know, I've handled a lot of partition actions over the years. I could, one in particular came to mind where it was a little too late once they got to me because they didn't have an attorney, and we tried to fix it later on, and we got somewhere, but not where we wanted to get.
Okay. We'll have more next week, too, on Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins. In the meantime, go online to harveyallencollins.com and give them a call for an appointment at 726-9050-1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.